Public
Green
Dreams
Raymond.
We are here with architect, debater and writer Petra Jingstål, who works as an acoustician at Delta Acoustik in Stockholm. Thank you so much for taking the time to join us on Public Retreat Radio. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
You work with sound, but from a slightly different angle than us. Could you tell us a little bit about yourself? You started as an architect, but switched to acoustics. What are the reasons behind that?
So I, as you said, started out as an architect, and I actually thought that acoustics would be a big part of the architectural education. So I had decided quite early when I was a little girl that I wanted to study architecture. And I was thinking a lot about acoustics beforehand as I entered my architectural degree, because I started studying architecture in Scotland, in Edinburgh. And it was definitely not part of the education in itself. It was even as bad as I tried to use acoustics in my first design project. And I was told by the tutors that also were practicing architects that they couldn't help me out in the project because they didn't know anything about acoustics.
Hmm.
And I found that really weird, and also as a big problem. If you're a practicing architect and you actually don't know anything about sound, this is not good. And then I tried to learn more about sound during my architectural education, but I felt that I was basically working against the stream. So I completed my bachelor in the UK, and then I studied a master's in architecture at Chalmers in Gothenburg. So then I started working as an architect for a company that had both acousticians and architects, which was definitely my dream to do the both things at the same time. But to be honest, after a while, I just had to pick one of them. So I swapped to the acoustic team and worked mostly with acoustics for a couple of years, but a little bit with architecture until I started working for the company that I work for now, which is purely an acoustic firm.
I it's very interesting what you say about the lack of training in acoustics or sound environments or soundscapes at the university. Because I can really relate, and I was trained here in Stockholm.
Mm.
The only thing we had was an acoustic. It wasn't even an acoustician like lecturing. It was an architect, and we were supposed to do like an opera, like a concert hall.
Yeah,
and that was super interesting, of course, and very good to know for that project. But it's like very few architects does like operas or concert halls.
Definitely.
So we didn't learn anything about like the basics of acoustics. So
And I find that really weird, because we can't avoid sound. It is going to be part of our experience of a space, in every space, and not just a concert hall.
Yeah.
So for me, it's a really important aspect of how we experience space.
Yeah. Yeah, we in Public Retreat also believe that.
Yes, you do.
But what intrigued you with working with sound and our common auditory environments? Or
a lot of people are afraid of noise, and the definition of noise is unwanted sound. Mm. And I feel like a lot of whenever sound is going to come into projects, it's usually because you want to take away the sound, the noise that disturbs you. Mm. And that was the thing that I was thinking of before I started studying architecture, and during the architectural education afterwards, that how is not sound a bigger part of what we want the space to sound like? What do we want to experience instead of something that we want to take away from a space?
Yeah. in your work now then as an acoustician at Delta Acoustic, but as well as in general, maybe you could give some examples what an acoustician does.
So so in most projects in Sweden, we have different consultants that do different things. So we have the architect that's supposed to be to do the drawings and the building in itself, but it's very much focusing on different aspects of light and materials and such. And then we have the construction engineer who's responsible for his or her part, and then the acoustician is basically responsible for the sound. So we are normally we would come in as one discipline and one consultant with an expertise in the projects, and very often we work with regulations and guideline values that we're supposed to fulfill. So the focus quite often is still on taking away the noise and trying to live up to certain standards that that relates to numbers that we don't always find appropriate. So then we try to communicate that too. So it is obviously a balance between making the client happy, which is obviously the main purpose of every project, but then also communicating with the client what it's getting. Normally people would want better acoustics for their project, but then they might not know what a certain standard actually means. So we try to communicate both in terms of what those numbers actually mean, but in Delta Acoustic we also work with psychoacoustics a bit, or at least try to communicate and talk about psychoacoustics as another aspect of sound, because it can get very mathematical and very hardcore physics when it comes to acoustics. But psychoacoustics is more more a way of investigating how people react to different sounds and why.
Oh, so it's the experience, of a space more. In relation to the sonic environment. That sounds...
And even more, which I think is very important to mention, is how it's very subjective what we feel like when we hear a sound. So I quite often work with products where I feel like it actually lives up to a certain standard or the guideline values that we're looking at, but people are feeling disturbed anyways. So it's very much up to what you feel like or what I feel like if I find a sound good or bad or disturbing to me.
Yeah, I guess like in any like a planning project or an urban project where I've done sometimes like interviews with people already living there. If you do like a development project within an existing housing area. Like some people love the idea of having a kindergarten. Like, oh, the laughter of kids. Yes. And some are like, oh my God, will there be kindergartens here?
Yeah.
So I guess the subjectivity of...
But it's the same like with things that we see. So we, as architects, there's a lot of focus on what we can see. But how, if we find something beautiful or ugly, is also very much up to each person.
It's true. I guess like we as a bigger we are not maybe used to reflecting upon sound, the sound environment we have. So when you do get called in to a project, what would you say like are the most common issue people have or their biggest like problem?
So one of those acoustic concepts that we actually work a lot with is something called reverberation time. And if I'm just going to try to explain it in an easy way, which is probably not physically or mathematically correct, it could be explained as the echo of the room. Mm. And a lot of people would believe, for example, that the echo in itself, or the echo in itself, is obviously a problem in most cases. But something that I find really interesting in terms of acoustic, it's something called speech intelligibility, STI. So basically, mm-hmm. how well you understand what someone is saying.
Mm.
And we have to work with this very differently, like depending on what kind of room it is. Like the way the speech intelligibility that you want for a room and want to experience is very different if you're in a concert hall, for example, or in an open plan office, or if you're in a restaurant or in a school. So so I would definitely say that that people quite often, again, as we were saying, want to take away the noise that they're that they're hearing.
And this echo, like, is it due to the materials in the room, or
it like, could be like hard surfaces? Yeah. Could be one of the reasons for longer reverberation time.
Could you ever like imagine a project where you want to have that, like a long?
When I was doing my master's thesis project at Chalmers, I found this underground water reservoir with an extremely long reverberation time. And I was in contact with these with a guy who was an artist and a musician. And these musicians used the long reverberation time as part of their performance, which was very cool. This is very uncommon, but it basically, you can imagine a space where it was about 20 by 20 square meters big, this water reservoir. And if I was there with just one friend, and if we were closer or further away than 1.5 meters apart, we basically couldn't hear each other talking because it was just such an echo within this building. So it was a very cool and uncommon space. And I called the thesis work that I did with this water reservoir was basically using the building for musical performances. And I called the project Tuned by Architecture. So basically the room and the architecture was tuning the instruments. Or
almost like an instrument.
Yes,
in itself. Oh, that's really cool. And I want to ask a little bit, you are a recurrent debater and writer in National Architect and construction related magazines on the topic of sound and auditory environments. And I kind of get the feeling you're angry with us architects. Why is that?
I'm not angry with architects, I would say, but maybe a bit frustrated. But coming back to my own education, my architectural education, I know that I wasn't given the tools to work with sound. So to be honest, I think that the problem is that in the architectural education, you don't learn about basic acoustic concepts at all, which means that you don't even understand when to ask for help. Because sound, now working with sound for so many years, I realized that it's super complex. And maybe I was even a bit naive during my studies, thinking that I would learn so much that I could actually use my knowledge about sound in terms of working as an architect. But it's more about understanding when you should ask an acoustic or like a sound expert for help in your building. Because you as an architect, you always need to ask for help with different expertise areas of expertise. And sound is one of them. But I feel like it's more ignored, maybe. Kind of like we design a space and we enter a room and we ignore that the sound is going to be there, basically, because it is going to be there. We can't avoid it. And if we don't take control over what we want it to sound like, it is going to accidentally sound like something we maybe didn't want to. For example, a restaurant where you can't talk to one another, or you have an office space where you get super disturbed by the other people working quite far away, like in the office space.
Do you also work with exterior, like not parks, but maybe outside area somehow?
Me myself haven't worked much with outdoor spaces, but acousticians could definitely come in and design spaces, even outdoors.
Just one question relating to like acousticians being one of many like expert consultants in a in a construction project. Do you feel that acousticians comes in too late in the project?
Very often. Very often we would come in very late. As I was saying, quite often we actually have numbers and guideline values that are like regulated that we need to fulfill. So it's not uncommon at all that you bring in an acoustician by the very, very end of the project just to verify that you're actually, that everything that you built is up to these regulations and guideline values. And we come in and realize that everything, or at least a lot of it, has been, you haven't been thinking about acoustics at all when you built this. And we end up having to tell them basically to start over sometime with at least parts of the building where they haven't been thinking about acoustics. And I actually work on a residential project right now where we're in the phase of making construction drawings. And no acoustician has been involved at all during the process. And I'm coming in now in the very end and starting out with just a great list of risks with the plan layout. And I'm trying to not be hard on architects when it comes to design, though, because I feel like a lot of architects need to stand up for the design in itself. So people are saying, what was the architect thinking? And I'm kind of thinking like, well, you're just one player in this game of consultants that try to make the best out of all like the desires and regulations that need to be fulfilled. When I come in a project like that, I'm trying to not be hard on the architect for the plan layout to be so risky, because I understand that there are so many other aspects that made this layout look the way it does. But in terms of having to fulfill these acoustic requirements, they need to be aware, but like earlier on, like that this could be a risk unless we try to find a solution for it. So definitely very often we would come in way too late for their own good, basically.
Yeah. Making it maybe more costly or cosmetic adjustments.
Exactly.
But what would then a perfect like residential building be like?
This is very subjective, for sure. But just from my own point of view, I think that my answer would be very different to most other people, because a lot of people would probably say that not hearing the neighbors would be something that they want in their living space. But I grew up in a villa when I was a kid, and I never liked being at home by myself. Even as living there as like in my 20s, I still didn't like being alone at home. And then I moved into a flat where it was just myself in Gothenburg living there. And I could hear my neighbors really well. I could even hear where I was sleeping. The neighbor had their kitchen, so whenever they were having friends over and I tried to sleep, and it was quite often, like Thursday night, like 11, they were talking. I couldn't hear I couldn't hear what they were saying, but I could properly hear them talking. And a lot of people would probably find this really annoying when they're supposed to sleep. But I felt safe. For me, I felt like, well, there are other people in this building. And if something happens to me, I can get their attention. So for me personally, I definitely wouldn't say that the perfect residential building would be without hearing your neighbors. But a lot of people would probably not agree with that.
Probably, but that is an interesting reflection, especially if maybe one final question. If we are considering how we are building now, denser and denser, what are your thoughts on the future? Will we hear our neighbors? Or
Yeah, that's also a good question. And that will come down to regulations that I'm not in control of. But in terms of like building denser, I would say like we need to be very careful with what kind of acoustic solutions we put in, basically. Because say that you, for example, put a sound barrier on the side of a road because you want to block out the sound that comes from the road, you're actually reflecting the sound towards the other side. So there's a lot of, in terms of trying to get rid of sound, we need to think of what other consequences there will be. But to be honest, I'm really impressed with your work, with the way that you work with sound. Because as I've been saying, a lot of what we tend to have to do as acousticians is taking away the noise and not working against the sound instead of with the sound. But a lot of the things that you've been doing in your art projects here is about listening to the city, experiencing space through sound, which I think is a really interesting approach. I haven't heard about any. We acousticians can sometimes add sound to spaces. That's also something that we can do as part of our discipline or expertise. But I haven't heard about anyone that's actually using the sound that's there and trying to find ways of experiencing space through sounds that are there already. I think it's really very nice and interesting approach to our sound.
Thank you for saying for those kind words. So, yeah. Well, maybe then I guess artists and architects and acousticians should team up more.
Yes, for sure.
Not able to.
Because what we end up with is like a lot of people wear headphones. So they basically create their own soundscapes locally where they are. And me, myself, I'm not a big fan of noise-canceling headphones or noise-canceling in itself. Because, for example, when I've been trying to use that in the kitchen and I'm cutting an onion, I'm super clumsy in the kitchen and I'm close to cutting myself because there are these subtle sounds that I would normally hear that will make me adapt, like moving away my fingers instead of cutting myself. But I realize that when I don't hear those sounds, it becomes unreal to me, like the soundscape, and I react really
like disconnected from your body somehow.
Yeah, disconnected is probably the word. So that in itself, like, I'm not a fan of. But I can also sit on the subway and I can activate the noise canceling on my earphones and just listen to something that I do want to listen to. And then I can turn it off just to listen to the soundscape and see the difference. And I kind of feel it's probably quite uncommon. I think most people will just plug them in and then stay in there in their own soundscape. But I find it a bit sad for sure that if our cities contain sound that people don't want to hear and they just block out the sound, they're not experiencing the space as I would, as I would think would be, as an architect at least, I would find it really nice if people wanted to experience the space as it is instead of trying to create their own space within a space to survive.
Yeah. Well, that's a nice dystopian, but maybe also, but also like a hopeful. Maybe we should try to connect more and maybe listen together.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, Petra Jingstål, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Public Retreat.